KPTZ, Port Townsend. Well, good afternoon. Good afternoon to you, wherever you may be, far, far away or nearby. Nearby could be just around the corner. Far, far away could be, well, could be Asia. Maybe we're speaking to someone in Asia at this very moment. This is Tossed Salad, and I'm Phil Anderson. We have on the show, beginning the show, Through Science to Health with Lynn Sorensen, RNBSN. We're going to talk about matters of good health in times of a pandemic. Well, let me see. Lynn Sorensen, I need to get to you. Lynn Sorensen, how do you like the noise in the background?
Oh, it's okay.
Okay for you. Well, at any rate, we're going to talk not about weed eaters, but through science to health, we're going to talk about some subjects that you wanted and a couple I proposed. We begin Jefferson County soon. The vote is at 2:30. County commissioners will vote. We rather expect the vote will be to apply to the state to enter phase two. And that really takes us to a time of transition, I think. But what I'd like to do first is I would like your sense of where we are.
Where we are.
Where are we?
We're at a junction.
Uh-oh, that sounds like a speakerphone again, Lynn.
Uh-oh. Let me take that off.
Please.
Okay, can you hear me now?
You sound like yourself, and I like it much better.
Okay. I hear an echo, but that's all right.
I don't.
Where we are now is at a junction. And there'll be new rules to follow. And this is assuming that we're going to start the phase two, and I don't know if that becomes immediate, and if we'll hear that today or if it'll be sometime next week. So boy, that's where we're at. And I think it's just going to be another time of learning how to deal with the state that we're in.
The state in the state, I guess you mean. And I think
yes.
That what the experience has been is that when states apply for a variance, the State Department of Health has been granting those variances quite quickly.
Yeah, so it has to go from here, today's decision, then to the State Department of Health. And I don't know if they just give a phone call and say you're on, or if it has to, with Monday being a holiday, I don't know if we have to wait till Tuesday. So that's yet to be determined.
It doesn't, from what I read in the Port Townsend Leader article, I believe authored by Lily Haight, regarding what Dr. Tom Locke has recommended, a lot of what many folks would be looking forward to, those things aren't going to be happening, like the sit-down restaurants and I would assume the bars and the taverns, and for that matter, the beer that I have promised to buy for you. It seems like all those are going to have to wait for a while.
Yeah, probably so.
And that's all right with all of us because we want to be safe. You wanted to talk about, well, let me look at my notes here. Is there more to say about this? Wanted to take stock, as I said, of where we are. We have been seeing the number 30 of coronavirus infections steady here in this county, really steady for 6 weeks, perhaps. What do you attribute? I think that surprising outcome. We were preparing for catastrophe, and we gloriously we have not had that catastrophe. But how did that? What did we do? Are we really that good at social distancing, or was there maybe? Go ahead.
I don't have an answer for you, really. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. And the last two that were added were from March. So, and one wasn't even in the state at the time. So are we that good? I think we're pretty conscientious. But it is surprising, since they've done over 1,000 tests now, that we got the 28 positive that we got. I don't think it's not here. So it is pretty astounding. And it would be great if we do, once we move into phase two, if we can keep that sort of ratio, that would be fantastic. But that's yet to be seen.
Well, I don't see people washing their hands because I don't usually join people in their bathrooms, but I do see people being very diligent about distancing, and I see masks. I don't see masks on everyone, but I surely see, I would say, the vast majority of people. Well, when I come to town, which is not all that often, today I am in town, and as I circled around on my bicycle a bit, masks are homemade masks, wonderful masks. They're like fashion statements as well as value statements, really. It's quite cool, yeah. As a matter of fact.
Well, the community mask making movement has been phenomenal. They've made at least 4,000 masks, and they anticipate possibly needing up to 10,000 total. So here's to all the sewers out there that have put their time and energies into this and donated the mask for the most part. And they've run out of elastic and they've run out of cloth. And yet I saw some masks today that where they were using nylon stockings twisted up for the elastic part of the mask. And another was using the things you put around a ponytail those were cut and they have a little bit of stretch to them and used them to keep the mask on. So people are really working at it and keeping them on, and I think it's a great statement.
You wanted to talk about vaccines, the possibility of vaccines. There is, how many? There are 330 million Americans. I don't know how many people on the planet, billions of people on the planet. There is a worldwide hope that everyone on the planet may be able to be vaccinated against the coronavirus. Right now, of course, there isn't a vaccine to use, but they're in development. Compare this effort. You wanted to, from what you wrote to me, compare this effort for a vaccine to the effort for a polio vaccine back in the earlier part of the 20th century.
Yeah. I found that was an article in the Washington Post, and it was what to expect when the coronavirus vaccine finally arrives. And it gave a history of the polio vaccine, which finally they got a safe one by 1955. But they had some trouble with that because, you know, they were being made and they weren't made effectively. Distribution was faulty, and people were afraid of it, and so it had its own times of, you know, trouble in getting out there, and it really took, let's see, the first one was in 1955, and I think it took... Yeah, they said the three early polio vaccines were developed in the 1930s. These were before the 1955 one. And two proved ineffective, and another one was deadly. So there's a lot to have checked on any new vaccine that's made. And then once it was available, vaccine program started a couple months later, but then mayhem followed. The vaccine was in short supply. Rumors spread of black markets and unscrupulous doctors charging exorbitant fees. And one vaccine manufacturer was planning to vaccinate its employees' children first and then send a letter to the shareholders promising their children and grandchildren priority access. So you can bet that there could be some of that happening. But it took, again, years to put a vaccine together that wouldn't kill you and wouldn't give you the disease. And we're trying to develop a vaccine under, you know, like lightning fast. And so all these people are taking on this challenge, but it still takes, you know, trying it on humans to see if it's going to work. And the polio vaccine, you know, it was fabulous. It took a lot of fear away from parents whose kids were possibly going to get it by going into a swimming pool, et cetera. And there was no cure for polio. It can only be prevented given the vaccine multiple times as a child for you to have that protection. And there are still three countries in the world where polio persists, and that's in Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Nigeria. So polio still exists worldwide, and, you know, someone with the polio virus can easily import it to, say, the United States, where we now have a lot of possibly unvaccinated children for polio. So it only takes one person coming here, mingling with the unvaccinated, to ramp that up again.
So I'm.
But I was reading.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I will then. In the early days of vaccines, as far as I know, there was not an active and very vocal anti-vaccination movement. But there is just that now. And I wonder what effect that will have on the ability to, I will say, as a society, vaccinate ourselves. That is, not individually, but to achieve through vaccination the herd immunity that you hear people talking about.
Right. I think it'll possibly be a battle. There's a lot of conspiracy theories out there about vaccines and possibly, again, for the coronavirus. But I read in another article, or actually this was on Democracy Now!, an interview of Lori Garrett, who's written a couple of books. One of them's called The Coming Plague. And she was saying for us to vaccinate 7.5 billion human beings, there's your global population, 7.5 billion, the miracle, the best vaccine that, as long as it works, would have to be like a one dose. They wouldn't have to come back for a booster shot, and didn't use a syringe, meaning it was either a nasal spray or taken orally or, say, a patch on the skin. So they wouldn't have the problem of the disposal of the needles. And then also for it not to be needed to be refrigerated, which a lot of vaccines do require refrigeration. And so then it could go to countries that may not have refrigeration available. And to add to that, it should be able to be mass-produced easily so it can get out there to the hundreds of millions that need it. I mean, it's a big order. That would be the golden ticket vaccine.
So we're not going to have a golden ticket. We're going to have...
No, we're definitely not there.
We're going to edge into... Well, it's going to be a matter of transition, isn't it? You also wanted to talk about, well, I think maybe I suggested, ethical considerations regarding the availability of the vaccine within our society and around the world. Well, within our society, would seem possible, you would hope not the case, that only the wealthy first would get the vaccines. I don't imagine it would proceed that way, but it could. But certainly wealthy nations would likely be the first to have access to the vaccines, which... This brings up ethical considerations. What should we do as a nation when there's only enough vaccine to go around and maybe not all the way around the world? Should we, as a nation, forego the vaccinations so that others in poorer countries could have them?
Well, that's a big question. I know that Gilead, I misspoke there. For the vaccination itself, I know that the EU is working or getting a fund together of $8 billion to research and, you know, try and develop a vaccine, but the United States hasn't bought into that. So as far as distribution of a vaccine that actually works, I mean, it's going to be a huge project, and I don't know how it would go. I think that the United States, say we came up with it, with this current administration, he wouldn't want it to be shared.
Drink Lysol.
You know? Yeah.
So let's talk about surfaces. But, when I came here this morning, as we do when we come into the studio, I found the cylinder of wipes, and I wiped everything down. And wisely so, I'm sure. But there's, I would say, not new information, but new emphasis by the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, suggesting that the virus does not spread easily. That's from their language, from contaminated surfaces. What do you make of, is this new information? Is this new emphasis? Are we seeing science in action?
I think it's new emphasis. I read that through the CDC website today, just looking for that particular clause, and it's there. And I think they're trying to emphasize it's person to person. That's the highest infectious probability. So the distancing and wearing the mask, along with the hand washing, are very important. Whether or not your counter has something on it, or the package that was delivered to you, or the food you're buying in the store. I mean, if you're washing your hands, you're on top of it, essentially. And so I don't know why this has come up again. It, someone said it was in some article where it was really, the font was huge, you know, about this. There's always a risk of virus being on something, but it's not very viable. The virus is not viable itself. It's not alive, and it doesn't really live until it gets into your cells and starts replicating. So I don't know what to say as far as the emphasis coming out again, except I think it's to help people be less anxious about going to the store or collecting their packages. And why it came out now, I don't know.
But it does make us more cognizant about what we really do need to avoid and
right.
how to avoid. So it's back to the keep 6 feet away or more, wear your mask and so forth, and don't get into a crowded inside space without protection, because that's where the danger lies.
Our higher risk would be in those situations, right?
Right. So you wanted to talk about, and I'm going to stumble over the name of this drug, remdesivir. Why is that important, and why do you feel that it's so hard to find, so hard to for hospitals and clinics to actually acquire?
Yeah. Well, this medication was developed when SARS came onto the earth in 2003-04. And also it was used against MERS as well. So those two are also coronaviruses. And they have found that this particular drug, it's not a cure, but it has been found to reduce the number of days you're in hospital. So, and it's given intravenously, and there have been some studies in Europe as well as here in the United States that have shown that it can help someone get better faster. How it works, I don't know. But Gilead is the pharmaceutical company that has the patent on it, and they are giving out, I don't know how many doses, free of charge to the United States and I think elsewhere in the world. But their distribution of it went through the Health and Human Services, the federal government's distribution, and it ended up coming to hospitals that did not have very many coronavirus-infected people, didn't go to the places that it should have gone, and it was just very poorly sent out. And they were saying, they were getting the recommendation from a number of people that it should have come out and be delivered to the states and have the states get it out to where it was needed the most. So this just reducing the time of, you know, helping you get out of a hospital sooner. And that could save a lot of money, yes. I don't know if it would be helpful in giving it to somebody who's on a ventilator already. I don't know that. But it is a good find, and Gilead has chosen not to put a price on it for when they actually do sell it, because they could charge, you know, $1,000 a dose or something, and I don't know how many doses you need to get. But it's again, it's a drug that's been sitting, waiting to be used, and so here it is being used against another coronavirus. So that is good. It'd be nice if we had kind of ramped up for the pandemic that was expected, you know, years in the making here. So, but we have that. And again, it's not a cure. It's just a, helps reduce the length of time in the hospital.
So I read in the Daily News, this is, I don't know if I sent you the article. I generally send you links to what I may want to talk about. I hope I did. But the city of Port Townsend is establishing an initiative that has four elements to slightly repurpose downtown. Some really good ideas, and I just want to, I don't know if you want to comment on them, but I'll tell you what they are and read them for our listeners as well, because I think it evidences really good thinking on the part of the city of Port Townsend. I'm sure there'll be people who will disagree with me, but there always are. One is to open up waterfront space on the lower portion of Adams Street, Boat Marine Park, and Tyler Plaza to limited and appropriately distance outdoor seating. So to make it so people can go to those downtown parks, especially because we know there's going to be people coming from over there, if you know what I mean, where you and I came from ourselves, didn't we? The second is to close, and I think this is wonderful. I wish this were permanent, close the portion of Taylor Street from Haller Fountain to Water Street to vehicle access, or traffic rather, to permit safe passage, basically to create a plaza for pedestrians, bicyclists, and people to socially distance. That stretch of street has been closed before. It's wonderful when it is. This one doesn't mean a lot to me, but it may be to other people. Increase frequency of garbage pickup due to the expected increase in takeout orders. There you go. And the last, expand access to public restrooms as well as strategically placed hand-washing and sanitizing stations near Taylor and Tyler Street. I hope Kathleen Keenan is listening or has read that, because that is something she has been advocating.
Yeah, I heard John Morrow, the city manager, talking about this on Tim's show yesterday, and I was actually downtown earlier this morning and saw that the Adams Street section has already been kind of blocked off from people parking in there, and I think it's a great idea. Whoever thought of it was very creative, and to have the hand-washing stations would be wonderful, and to have Taylor Street closed off, but that cuts, I mean, I've heard people already say, well, that'll cut the amount of parking that we have downtown. But right now, downtown is kind of a ghost town. So that's okay. But yeah, I hope it would help the restaurants that are along that stretch to get more business. I think it's just a very creative idea. And they put their picnic tables already at the Adams Street section. So, you know, families can get together. Well, we can have five people get together now at a sit-down area if we are into phase two. So, again, I'm all for it.
So creativity and kindness.
Mm-hmm.
Creativity on the part of city government and scientists developing vaccines, and kindness just to smooth all the rough, difficult spots with this pandemic.
Yeah.
And it's kind
Could
of you
I speak
to
one more thing.
Yeah. Oh, please.
One more.
One okay. more thing before Big Yellow Taxi arrives.
Yes. Hydroxychloroquine, the medic anti-malarial drug that President Trump has been advocating. The Lancet Medical Journal came out, published today, an article, a study actually, the largest analysis to date of the risk and benefit of treating COVID-19 patients with this anti-malarial drug. And that they're saying the risks include arrhythmias or irregular beating of your heart, and that can lead to sudden cardiac arrest. And it's one thing for a drug not to have a benefit, but this shows that there's distinct harm in taking it. While Trump has been saying he's taking it now, you know, we can only hope for some kind of outcome from that, but there people have been injured by taking this medication because it's been endorsed by the administration. And one more thing about statistics. Well, the United States has about 4% of the world population. It has more than 25% of the deaths from COVID-19 in the world. Those are horrible statistics.
So just thinking about who might be especially at risk taking that drug that leads to heart arrhythmia, and I would think that an obese person would want to be especially careful around that drug.
I wouldn't recommend it for anyone.
Well, I'm just thinking about a particular individual who is both obese and taking the drug. Lynn Sorensen, we have a big yellow taxi on the way. Yes, you know what I'm talking about, don't you? Big
yes,
yellow taxi. Why are we having a big yellow taxi come to Toss Salad?
Again, I love Joni Mitchell, and this is actually a song from like 1970. And one of the main lyrics in it is, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. So, you know, here in Port Townsend, we live a pretty blessed life. But now we have a lot of things that are gone out of our lives that we normally used to do. So that's sort of what this song speaks to.
And Lynn Sorensen, RNBSN, Through Science to Health compatriot here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
See
Have a good day.
See you again soon. Bye-bye.